With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the Top Order podcast. It's all of us here recording remote in Auckland again. It's the 11th of October. On This Week in Cricket This Week, we're going to talk Ashes on with full squads. The IPL Top Four has been announced. Australia women versus India is coming to a conclusion. We've got resignations galore, and we're also going to talk a little bit about New Zealand rescheduling their tour of Pakistan. All coming up on the Top Order podcast. Stay tuned. So we're going to start off with the Ashes are on, Baldy. You and I have been having a little bit of banter over the course of the last few weeks. Tim Payne making a few ill-conceived comments, but it seems to have done the job because it's forced all of the England full strength, or as full strength as England can be, getting onto the plane for that first test match due to take place December the 8th. There is still a huge caveat, though, isn't there, that it's subject to some conditions being met. And one thing's for sure with COVID, we're going to have a few curveballs before then. But is it making you guys feel excited? What's the sort of haps with the boys around the top order?
Oh, boys, I'm massively excited for this Ashes. This Ashes is on. England are going to send pretty much their full squad. So the only people who are not going to tour at this stage, Jofra Archer under injury, and also Ben Stokes, injury / mental health. So it looks like Josh Butler's going to go. It looks like Joe Root's going to go. Jimmy and Stuart Broad are going to go. Raj, you'll be excited. Rory Burns has been named in the squad. No real surprises in terms of those squad inclusions. Haseeb Hameed and Zach Crawley have made the cut. Dan Lawrence has made the cut. Interesting, no Dom Sibley. No real surprises in the bowling attack either, with Jack Leach and Dom Bess also being included at spin cover with the retirement of Mo Ali. But yeah, I'm massively excited to see the 17-man touring party announced. It looks like at this stage, everything going ahead. And bring on that first test, the ambush at the Gabba again.
Yeah, for me, I really like the squad. I really like how they maintained definitely that batting structure that they had towards the end of that Indian series. They look to be gelling a little bit. Milan is key for me in the series going forward. But I'd have a couple of questions, actually, and it's more around the bowlers. So I'm going to throw to you, Binksy, or maybe Stu, and it's really around what England's bowling attack looks like. The inclusion of Bess and Leach in this touring squad and how that plays with the team that they've had over the last couple of series where they haven't really had spinners. But going to Australia, it's a place where you're probably going to have spin being required on a number of the different pitches depending on the venues they play at, but you can't use pace bowlers the whole time. What do you think the makeup of that bowling lineup will look like?
Well, I think Leach is going to have a big role, actually, in terms of that kind of holding role. He'll probably have a big role there. I mean, I would be a bit worried about Bess's role and ability to be able to do that, given that of what we've seen from him in recent times. But, you know, it's sort of a weird one because he had, it seemed like he had such a negative experience over there in India, and now he's come back. And now he's come back, and, you know, he's always been in those squads. But, you know, I think it's basically what you're saying. And the biggest thing for me is the balance of that side. If they're not going to play those four seamers, then they're going to have someone like a Wokes, or they're going to have, or they're going to have him batting at seven, or they're going to have to play an extra batter and only have four bowlers. And then you've got someone like a Jack Leach, who's going to have a lot of overs to bowl potentially in those scenarios.
Yeah, look, guys, you're not going to be surprised to see that I'm going to say I'm a little bit worried about the England team that's going over there. I think the missing of Stokes is just such a massive thing for England, because we know that he can bat at number five and provide a few overs as a genuine third or fourth seaming option. I think that in terms of the spin piece, and Moeen Ali as well, it hasn't had great success in Australia, but I think is the one English spinner that they think puts enough action on the ball. I think if you look at the fact that Leach has really fallen out of favour, I don't think they think that his best off spinner, or albeit a left arm off spinner, is as good as Moeen Ali's best ball. And that's why Ali came back into the mix. And then for me, the problem without having Stokes and without having Moeen Ali is that they might be forced down the route of either playing a Dom Best, because he offers a little bit more with the bat and in the field potentially than Jack Leach. And it's kind of, how do we actually get a sum of three or four players' parts to almost replace what Stokes and Moeen Ali might have given the team? And I think that, you know, the biggest factor there as well is there's still some really big questions over that batting lineup as well. You know, Milan coming in at number three, I like the look of Burns and Hamid at the top of the order. Milan's got some questions to answer. Root's in the form of his life. But then we've got some question marks around 5, 6, 7 and how we balance that side. And then really, really telling that when we did have some success in the Ashes in 2010-11, we did it with a battery of bowlers. And I think that, you know, we don't have that same battery going with us this time. We've only got Mark Wood, who can get anywhere near 145, 148 kph. Or, you know, in old money, 90 mile an hour. And we've got a lot of guys that they're going to be relying on relentless accuracy. And I think, you know, someone like Craig Overton has proved that, you know, at that sort of 83, 84 mile an hour pace, he doesn't actually even have that relentless accuracy. Well documented that Wokes doesn't have a great record with the Kookaburra. Well documented that Jimmy Anderson is, you know, 39 going on 40. So look, some real worries in that side, but I don't think that they could have put together a better business class section to take on the tour to Australia. That, you know, it wasn't as if there were a bunch of guys that had been banging down the door with performances in the English summer or in county cricket for me. So, yeah, pessimism from the English corner, but you'd expect nothing less, right?
So just to follow on from that, I guess, not that I was surprised, but I saw, you know, Crawley and Lawrence in that touring squad. For me, I feel like this is almost a, you know, last chance saloon for them. What do you think about that, Baldy?
Well, yes, I think they are. There's not too many more opportunities, I think, that you could give to someone like Zach Crawley or Dan Lawrence without forcing them back into county cricket and forcing them to make a butt ton of runs and then get their way back into the side. The concern for me is they've already gone to a, well, let's call them experienced players in Bairstow and Milan. So, yeah, I think their eye is on this Ashes tour, and then they might look to youth. But then who else do you go to? As Adam said, not many players have bashed down the door. The one comfort that they do have is that I've been reliably informed by a good source that there'll be a Lions tour that will shadow the England squad to provide them with warm-up matches and then backup players as well. Thank you, Adam. So that means that there will be an opportunity, if they need to drop someone and bring someone else in. But then who are they going to do that? I think they're going to go with the squad that they've got, the 17. They might, you know, tweak a little bit here and there, but those are the guys that have to win the Ashes. If they don't make runs in the first two tests, England are going to be in a big hole again, and they're not going to be able to climb out of it. So the first two tests for me, particularly at the Gabba, is absolutely crucial.
Yeah, and look, the only other interesting point I'll make is Ben Stokes undergoing rehab on his second finger operation. And really, really key for me was in the announcement, the end of that rehab period almost finishes on the day that they get on the plane. So they've left the door just a little bit open there that his medical treatment will be finishing just as they're queuing up for their Emirates flight to Australia. We'll move on to the Emirates again, or certainly that part of the world. The IPL top four has been finalised. It seems an age ago since we did our IPL preview. So those eagle-eyed listeners will know that we got it spot on in terms of our predictions. And if we didn't, you can go back and tell us the episode number where we got it so horribly wrong. But yeah, guys, we've already got our first, sort of one through the final as well over the course of the eliminator or the qualifier. I forget which one it was that was played the other night.
Yes, thanks for illustrating my point that I might have to just do a quick refresher of the playoff format. But yeah, we have reached that pointy end of the tournament, and the four teams that made it through to the playoffs are the Kolkata Knight Riders in fourth, RCB in third, Chennai Super Kings in second, and the Delhi Capitals first. And as you mentioned, Binksy, CSK won the first grand final qualifier, which was for the top two teams. So they're, you know, with a really inspired MS Dhoni closing of that final innings, got through. So they go straight through to the final. And next we have the third and fourth place teams playing each other. So that's RCB and KKR. And the loser goes home and the winner goes through to the second grand final qualifier against the Delhi Capitals. The big elephant in the room, which I'll leave probably to Baldy to talk about, is Mumbai Indians didn't make it, even in an odd-numbered year, which is interesting. It's a shame we won't be hearing that victory song this year. I guess for me, I'm going to make a little prediction here. I think that the Delhi Capitals will actually win that grand final qualifier, the second one, against RCB, and they will beat CSK in the final. That's what I think is going to happen. Over to you, Baldy.
Yeah, well, I had the Mumbai Indians chant ready to go, and shame, just a real shame that they're gone, really. Traditionally slow starters, as I recall, in IPL tournaments. They've come back, they've started slow, they didn't give themselves enough time to build that all-important momentum going into the back end of the tournament, and they missed out. They only missed out by run rate against KKR, having finished on the same number of points, I believe. So, look, they had it in their own hands. They didn't take the chances. Unusually won it last year in an even-numbered year. That's obviously upset the feng shui of their setup, and they weren't able to repeat the dose in what is traditionally their strongest suit, which is the odd-numbered years. But, yeah, I just think with that Chennai side, they were disappointing last year. They've turned it around. They've got performance out of Gaikwad. They've got performances out of all their guys. Mo Ali's been good for them. MS Dhoni turned back the clock last night with a vintage performance. So I just think they've got all of the makings of a grand final winning side.
Yeah, look, Baldy, the one thing that I want to pick up on is, I mean, you touched on Mumbai really just... Yeah, like you said, went 1-4 on the return after being in a pretty good position before that. Only scored over 150 once in that time. That star-studded batting lineup: Rohit, De Kock, Sky, Pandya, Pollard, Kishan. Just it never really clicked all at the same time. But you know, in the meantime, we had KKR, the side you mentioned there, that pipped them to really turned it around. And you know, I'm going to of course give a few Kiwis a shout out here. And obviously, it's Brendan McCullum who's leading that side, and I think the whole first half of that tournament he kept going, look, we just want them to play more fearless cricket, and they actually came out and did it in that second half of the tournament, and they've really stormed home. And look, who needs Pat Cummins when you've got Lachie Ferguson? He's been unbelievable in this back half of the tournament. 10 wickets from 5 games at an average of 11 and an economy rate of 6. I mean, it's just absolutely been superb. I think I've mentioned it a couple of times, that slower ball's been going great. And, you know, even Tim Southee's been chipping in with some handy performances. So, look, KKR's going to provide RCB. I mean, this is going to be fish and chip paper by the time you guys hear this. That game is being played overnight, KKR and RCB. So, but look, I wouldn't count them out. And as I've said all along for months now, Kohli's not in great form. So, let's go KKR.
Yeah, the big thing for me in this fixture is that you've got three or four players with some points to prove in this tournament. Owen Morgan has had a very lean spell with the bat for KKR. has had the backing of his coach and great mate McCullum. You know, I think one of the comments was he just said class is permanent. So look, I'd expect Owen Morgan to put in a good show. The other one for me is big Dre Russ, has healed pretty quickly from some injuries before, but it, you know, looking like it will need to be a miracle for him to be on the field, but you wouldn't bet against it in such a big, big fixture. And as you've mentioned, Coley as well with a point to prove as well. So look, I really hope the pitch is good. And I hope it's a crackerjack of a game this evening. One that I'll actually be tuning in for, I think, as well.
Boys, before we'll obviously do a bit of a wrap-up of the entire IPL next week and look back. But, Baldy, just a word maybe on Glenn Maxwell. I mean, obviously someone who came into the tournament with a big price tag, and I think both you and Raj kind of mentioned that, you know, you give him a bit of responsibility and he seems to perform much better. And he's been unbelievable for RCB in this tournament. You know, he's averaged about 45, almost 500 runs, striking at 150, playing match-winning innings and really living up to that price tag this time.
Yeah, a real interesting switch of teams for Glenn Maxwell. He's gone into a side that's got other stars around him, and it just looked like he was playing with a bit more freedom. You know, he's got Coley at the top, he's got AB around him, and then some guys that that have kind of been lesser-known names. Dev Dutpatikal, huge last year as well, but a few of those lesser-known names have stepped up a little bit during the tournament, but he's just been playing superb cricket, Glenn Maxwell. Match-winning innings, as you say, with the bat, handy with the ball, and look, with the World Cup just around the corner, he is hitting peak form at just the right time for me.
Baldy, over to you to talk about Australian women just finishing up their series against India, and there's been some good cricket.
Been some excellent cricket, and of course, the streak has ended. All good things must come to an end. Australia's streak of undefeated ODI successes ends at the hands of the Indian women team at 26. Look, a really good series. Australia looked like after that first ODI and Mackay that they would be unbeatable again. You know, they ran down 225 for 8 with 227 for 1, and it all looked kind of a bit of a fait accompli for the rest of the series. But India bounced back again, competitive in a few of the matches, competitive, and won the third ODI, of course. Drawn test match in that day-night test. India were on top in that test match. I mean, really, after day one, didn't really look like giving up the ascendancy. They declared, Australia declared behind, and then, you know, the game sort of petered out on day four. But, you know, India have taken some momentum off Australia in that ODI series, and even in the T20s, they were 131 for 4 after 15 overs when that match was washed out on the Gold Coast. Yes, Australia have won the other two games, but I just really feel like the field is closed a little bit. It's a lot closer than I think people gave credit for at the start of the series, certainly between Australia and India. And looking ahead to the World Cup next year, I think England and New Zealand in particular will take a lot from that series between Australia and India and go, look, the Australians are beatable now. Okay, they've missed a couple of players from their squad, a couple of senior players that'll come back for the World Cup. But man alive, there's opportunity here in a one-off game for England, India, or New Zealand to be able to upset this Australian side and potentially take home the World Cup. So it's all to play for.
Yeah, that like you just said, that's absolutely a lot, exactly what New Zealand fans, particularly here, just wanted to see, because, you know, I've been banging this drum about you know, New Zealand just got to win. They've just got to win those couple of games. That's all you got to do in a World Cup. You got to win the semi-final, you got to win your final, assuming you get there, obviously. But, you know, we just had a really good chat with Katie Martin, White Ferns wicketkeeper, who, you know, that episode will probably come out after this one, and you know, we discussed it in a bit more detail there, and I completely agree with you, Baldy. 2 months ago, you watched that Australian women's side and you just thought they're never going to lose a game. And particularly, I think that second ODI, you know, India was right on top in that game. It looked like they were finally going to break that streak. And then Beth Mooney put in one of the greatest innings, you know, all time for Australia. Talia McGrath got them home as well. And just a huge performance. And you kind of think when something like that happens, it sucks the life out of the other team. But for India to bounce back and win that next game and shut down the streak, very, very impressive. And I think they can take a lot out of what they've done this tour.
We'll move on to a couple of resignations. So ECB Chairman Ian Watmore is standing down with immediate effect from the ECB chair position. been appointed for 5 years. He's barely a year into that term. Lots of stories suggesting a number of the counties actually voicing their dissatisfaction at his handling, particularly of the domestic structure not being finalised for the next couple of years. But also, in fairness to him, some pretty difficult scenarios to deal with in the first year of his tenure, not least all the scheduling issues, COVID, etc., hitting during his tenure. But yeah, immediately stood down. And I guess the rumour mill sort of started pretty quickly after that with Wasim Khan's recent announcement, him returning to the UK to be back with his family after nearly 3 years with the PCB. And yeah, people putting two and two together, perhaps a little bit of a restructure. But you'd have to say that Wasim's more probably of a CEO than a chairman, very different roles. But who knows what might happen, restructuring boards around the world. Did that catch your eye, or is it just me as an English nerd?
Oh, no, I was fully on board with that. I've been following the Pakistan stuff a little bit, obviously, because of New Zealand's recent involvement there that has, you know, garnered a little bit of media coverage in recent times. And, you know, just on that, it looks like New Zealand is at least trying to reschedule that tour, possibly for 2022, the back end of that year. I mean, very interesting, you know, Ramiz Raja seems to be kind of announcing things on Twitter rather than talking to the New Zealand CEOs, which seems to be the way.
It's a legitimate method for leaders with grandeur or delusions of grandeur, particularly when it comes to world power.
Well, yeah, it does seem to be the way to get your information out there at the moment. But, you know, I think we've all said it on this podcast, right, that we've been very impressed with what Wasim's done in Pakistan, getting cricket back to the region. So, you know, I don't think he'll be without a job for long if he wants one.
Yeah, it certainly popped up on my radar as well, the resignation of Ian Watmore from that ECB setup. Look, he's had a lot to deal with over the last 12 months. Of course, the 100 reschedule multiple times, the impact of the 100, again, that kind of the angst between county cricket and the county setup and that kind of franchise-based 100 tournament can't be understated. That's caused a lot of stress for a very vocal minority of pro-county fans, and they're maybe not in the minority, but they're certainly quite vocal about the future of county cricket. So if counties are leaning on that ECB executive to make sure that they protect the future of the county game, any uncertainty there is going to be sort of leveraged as much as it could. But, I mean, England, by and large, have had a pretty successful test summer. They got 6 out of the 7 tests that they needed to in against India. They had a very successful running of the 100. Okay, you can maybe talk about the county championship, the Bob Willis championship, and those kinds of things maybe not being as successful as they would like to have been. But every nation has been able to or has had to deal with that from a COVID perspective. You know, New Zealand's summer hasn't quite got underway yet. Rumours about, you know, Australian domestic sides can't play at the moment because of lockdown and only certain Shield games are underway. So look, there's challenges all over the world, and unfortunately it looks like Ian Watmore has been a victim of some of those scheduling conflicts and scheduling challenges, and it's only going to get worse from here.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, should just add that I think some health concerns for him as well. He actually stood down from the Football Association, similar role at the Football Association, and had a bit of a heart problem at that point and has cited that sort of well-being piece. But I think it was a case of one of those mutual understandings that led to him resigning from his position. And I don't think that would have been opposed by the sounds of the rest of the news coming out of the UK. Well, that does wrap up this short This Week in Cricket. You will see a little bit of a change to the way that we're going to go about things here on the Top Order podcast in our scheduling, with another episode hitting your feed a little bit later this week, which will be our preview of the ICC T20 World Cup. We're going, look, I guess in the order of the game at the moment, Short and Snappy is winning the race. So you'll see regular releases from us here at the Top Order podcast over the course of the next few months as we try and cram a lot of cricketing content into our fledgling but scrappy underdog New Zealand cricketing podcast. So please check back in on your feeds very, very shortly. Listen to what our musings on the T20 World Cup are. But for all of us here, tonight here in Auckland. It's good night. God bless. See you soon.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.